Another round of proposed tax cuts are set to be unveiled this week, with House Republicans hoping to draw a deep line in the sand between themselves and Democrats ahead of the November elections. Top Republican lawmakers say a new tax debate would highlight the party's upbeat outlook on the economy, appearing to take a page from the president's playbook, who on Monday used the latest economic indicators to slam Democrats and take credit for the strong economy.
After being battered down with lawsuits and a reported SEC probe over trying to take the company private, Tesla on Monday finally got some good news. Brokerages Baird and Bernstein both backing the electric car maker, saying they believe Tesla will hit its goals in the second half of the year and even turn a profit.
The Winklevoss twins breaking new ground in the cryptocurrency world Monday, securing New York State approval for their dollar-linked digital currency. The Gemini dollar is the first of its kind to get the nod from the state's regulator, the so-called stablecoin, which, unlike a Bitcoin, is strictly pegged to the dollar on a one-to-one basis, will allow users to send and receive U.S. dollars on the Ethereum blockchain.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's September 11th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Good to be with you, and thank you for being with us this morning for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We have a great show for you this morning. Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frerichs is here. We're going to be talking about some of the issues that he's dealing with on a daily basis, monitoring the state's finances and the like. He's headed off to a big conference and to share some ideas and talk with other state treasurers as well. We'll tell you what's going on in his world. He'll be in our first segment this morning. A little bit later on, Dale Buss will be here, a contributor at Forbes and Chief Executive Magazine, one of the regulars here on our show as well. Dale has written a piece about the age of transparency in the C-suite, and that'll be at about 5:40 this morning. We'll have that conversation. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are down about 79 points. That's about a third. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Looking at the intel from around the world, markets in Japan generally higher, with everything else in Asia lower. By almost a third to three quarters, the Hang Seng down about three quarters. In Europe, markets are also in the red this morning. The FTSE, the DAX, the CAC, all off more than half a percent to three quarters. And oil is trading at $67.65 a barrel. A couple of headlines around the world. What's next at CBS? The resignation of longtime CBS chief Les Moonves won't likely lead to any drastic changes in network programmings. But it could make the company ripe for takeover as traditional media companies compete with upstarts like Netflix and Amazon. Moonves was ousted Sunday, just hours after The New Yorker detailed more sexual misconduct charges against him. A dozen women have alleged mistreatment. CBS also shook up its board and settled a larger fight with its parent company, National Amusements. As part of the settlement, National Amusements agreed not to push for a merger between CBS and sibling company Viacom for at least 2 years. Official figures show that pay levels in the UK picked up strongly during the summer, a development that should shore up the economy amid uncertainty surrounding Brexit. And that's good news for the Eurozone, especially if you have investments there. A strike targeting 25 downtown Chicago hotels is entering its fifth day as housekeepers, cooks, and others remain off the job. The strike's fourth day. On the fourth day, some hotels scrambled to get rooms cleaned and check-in guests, according to a report by the Tribune. A main demand of members of the Hotel Workers Union, Unite Here Local 1, is for year-round health insurance for employees laid off in slower months. Front and center this morning, we begin with the State Treasurer of Illinois, Michael Frerichs, back on the program this morning to talk about some of the issues in his office that he's dealing with on a daily basis. Treasurer Frerichs, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. It's great to be back.
We are interested to know what the issues are in your office that affect all of us here in Illinois these days. What would you say the biggest is?
Well, I'd say our biggest job in the treasurer's office is to be the chief investment officer. We focus on this very much because we know that every dollar we can bring in interest is a dollar that the governor and the General Assembly don't have to raise in taxes, or a dollar in cuts they don't have to make to things like education. So we focused on that. We made some changes to our investment strategy, and we have more than quadrupled the amount of interest we've brought into the treasurer's office since taking office.
That's pretty good. Thank you for doing that, by the way. It's been very strong with all kinds of investments, hasn't it?
It has. We've seen rising interest rates, which have helped us to bring in more interest, but that's not the entire story. We also went to the General Assembly. I'm very limited in what kind of investments I can make. The General Assembly limits what kind of things I can invest in because they don't mean taking a lot of risk. Everyone likes it when I say that I increased interest returns, but they really hate it when you tell them that you lost money.
Right.
So I have to make very conservative investments, but I've gone to the General Assembly, passed legislation, which increased the number of vehicles I can invest in. That got us a higher rate of return, and we were very conservative with the length of our investments, our weighted average maturity. We've increased that significantly by doing some better modeling and knowing when we'll need money. That's helped us. So when we came in, we were bringing in about $4 million a month in interest. We've increased that to over $22 million a month in interest. That doesn't solve all of our budget problems, but we're trying to help and be part of the solution.
And you mentioned the budget there. The issues in Illinois, I mean, we've went for so long without a budget. We're back on the track now, at least of having a budget. What if you had to give our state finances a report card, what would they be? What would that be?
Well, I would say my mother was never happy when I brought home anything less than a B, and she would not be happy with the state right now.
Okay. You are headed off to an Association of State Treasurers meeting. I believe it's going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona, where a lot of these sort of same issues are going to be coming up. What would you say is going to be the big topic there?
Well, there's a lot of different things that state treasurers deal with. A friend of mine liked to say, if you've seen one state treasurer's office, you've seen one state treasurer's office. We are all different. Some of us are, we're all in charge of investments, but some of us are in charge of college savings. Some are involved in unclaimed property. In Illinois, we are also now involved in a savings account for people with disabilities, and we're going to be helping people save for their retirement. But I come away with a lot of good ideas by listening to other states, and one of them that we're implementing very soon is we're going to just start sending people unclaimed property checks. They don't have to go to our website anymore. They don't have to fill out a form. They don't have to send us notarized documents. We passed legislation last year, which allows us to work with the Department of Revenue. So if you pay your taxes, you sign a form stating this is who you are, this is where you live, this is your Social Security number, you swear to it under penalty of oath, we can now work with the Department of Revenue. They share their list of taxpayers. We run that list against our match with our list of unclaimed property holders. And if there is a match, we will send a check to someone's office. They don't have to go to their home. They don't have to go to our website and go through a lot of hassle. It's part of our commitment to returning as much property as we can to as many people as possible in the state of Illinois.
And so that means the end of the cash dash programs where we have, those were pretty exciting at times, weren't they?
No, unfortunately, it will not mean the end of it.
Okay.
This means we will return over $12 million to people in the state of Illinois. Tens of thousands of people will benefit by this. And this is an idea we got from one of our National Association of State Treasurers meetings. They do this in Wisconsin. They do it in Rhode Island. We thought it was a great idea, but it only applies to people with property less than $2,000 in value, where they are the sole owner, where they currently live at a residence we can verify.
What
so for people who have more than $2,000, for people who have something coming to them that they share with a sibling or someone else because of a state settlement, for someone who has moved at a different address, they still should go check out IllinoisTreasurer.gov. We're still getting money for them, but this will clean a lot of properties off our books and hopefully make a lot of people happy. We know that when we put money into people's hands, they're much more likely to spend it at a local restaurant or a local business. And that money circulating throughout the economy does a lot more good for our state than it does sitting in a bank account in Springfield.
Does this also save your office money in terms of taking care of that money and the process, the general process of waiting for somebody to come and claim it as well?
Well, we think this is going to be a lot more efficient, but it's not the first thing we've done. We also had an idea that we started implementing in January that helped us set a record last year. As a matter of fact, the last 3 years we've set records. We returned $155 million 2 years ago, which was the most money ever returned in Illinois history. Last year we broke it. We returned $159 million. This year we smashed it by returning $180 million and more than doubling the number of claims processed. And how do we do that? We use the power of the Internet. You know that if you go in for a credit check, that bank can find out various places you worked, if you were late paying your credit card bills, if you were late paying your rent. The Internet knows an awful lot about you, Steve, and we use that power now. Now, you can go to our website and file a claim. You don't have to send in forms. That's less than $500. We'll do a simple Internet search, and we can verify that Steve Grzanich, who lived at your address, was owed that money, will write the check without you sending a single document. So we're working every day to make improvements in the Treasurer's Office, to return more money to people in the state, to bring in more money and interest, and help give people the tools they need to invest in themselves.
Very nice. So I'll be waiting for my check, Treasurer. I hope it's coming someday soon. The more the merrier, I think, on that regard.
We'll make a special look for you today, Steve, and see if we have something that belongs to you. Have you checked for yourself in the past?
No, I have not. I think I should probably go do that during a break here. That'll probably be a good thing.
IllinoisTreasurer.gov.
All right, Treasurer, hang on with us. We're going to continue with State Treasurer Michael Frerichs here in the opening bell as more topics we'll talk about, blockchain technology, cybersecurity, public pensions. We'll continue our conversation, but I know a couple of other big issues that you and your colleagues in other states are dealing with these days is cybersecurity, and this will be one of the conference topics as well. What can you tell our listeners about how the state is securing our finances?
Well, this is a big topic for this session. You know, as I said, every treasurer's office does something different, but this is an issue that is becoming an issue for a lot of us. And for some of my treasurer colleagues who are a little older, but doing this a little while longer, this is brand new to them. And this is scary and new to a lot of their citizens as well. That's clearly a direction financial markets are moving that we need to be prepared for, and that'll be one of the big topics of this conversation.
A lot of banks and other financial institutions having the conversation about incorporating blockchain technology. Is that something that could also go to the state level as well?
Oh, most certainly. We are not there yet, but we are trying to get ahead of this. You know, when I came into office, we conducted an audit of our processes and things that we did. We discovered some things we were supposed to be doing we weren't doing, some things we need to be doing better. But just 4 years ago, this wasn't something that was being discussed amongst treasurers. But it has moved very quickly, and it's a topic we need to get out in front of.
One of the other topics, too, that I think a lot of states are dealing with, you mentioned earlier, this is a good. These conferences are a good way to get ideas for dealing with things like public pensions. Other states are having problems, just like Illinois. Ideas there from other states to deal with these problems?
Well, I would say very few states have the problems that Illinois has. Kentucky has a really big pension problem, so is New Jersey. California's is very large in terms of absolute dollars. We will discuss this. It is not one of the topics at this conference because not every state treasurer's office is in charge of pension funds. You know, every state has one. But, you know, in Illinois, we have separate boards. We've got the teacher retirement system has its own board with gubernatorial appointments and members being elected. We also have a state university retirement system board. And then there's the Illinois State Board of Investment, which takes care of just state employees and judges. That's one that I serve on as one of nine members. The treasurer is a de facto member of that board. You know, I'm not in charge of pension benefits, which is a big driver in our pension problem, but we are in charge of investments. And so what we did is work on things we can control. And we came in and we have moved with other members of this board to reduce our investments in hedge funds and high fee hedge funds. We've moved to index a lot of our investments. And that has significantly reduced the fees we're paying. That means more money is staying in the pension fund. We'll have more money to invest, and that is going to be helpful. But, Steve, there's no way we're going to invest our way out of our unfunded liabilities. They just have grown too large after decades of underfunding the system. We're going to have something happen. It's going to take some real discipline for a long time to invest in our way out of this and require making your annual required contribution every year, or to find some sort of agreement to get out from under this debt. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court said there's not much we can do. We can't reduce the benefits that have already been promised. So we're going to have to make some really tough decisions and make some really big payments for the next several years.
Treasurer, we appreciate you being with us this morning. All the best to you and everyone in your office, and thanks for getting up with us today.
Well, hey, thanks for having me. The other reason people should go to IllinoisTreasurer.gov to check for unclaimed property is we also have money that belongs to businesses and to nonprofits. And so when people go check for themselves, check for your family members, but also see if we have money that belonged to your business. We'd love to return it to you.
Outstanding. Treasurer, have a great day.
Thank you very much, Steve. Have a great morning.
Michael Ferrix, the Treasurer of Illinois. You can also follow him on Twitter at IllTreasurer, I-L-Treasurer. Again, the website is IllinoisTreasurer.gov.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Jaunt, a virtual reality tech company based out of San Mateo, California, is acquiring a 7-person software division of Personify, a Chicago-based startup that makes applications for streaming augmented and virtual reality videos. Personify's teleporter engineers will remain in Chicago, allowing Jaunt to open an office here. And Chicago-based edtech startup Otis has named Seth Gers its new chief sales officer. In his new role at Otis, Gers will be working to expand national sales for the K-12 all-in-one platform. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us here this morning on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Transparency, it's a question, topic that a lot of C-suites are dealing with these days, some better than others, some not at all, really. But Dale Buss is with us this morning, a contributor for Forbes and Chief Executive Magazine, with the story about how SC Johnson is doing transparency. It's a very interesting article. Dale, good morning. Welcome to us. Welcome back to The Opening Bell this morning. I'll get it out.
How are you? Yeah, thanks again, Steve.
This is a cool story because SC Johnson, based up in Racine, Wisconsin, is a chemical company. And here it is out in front with transparency. Tell us what you've written here.
Well, yeah, I mean, at first blush, it would seem that a company that makes, you know, Windex and Glade and Raid and Off and many other household chemical products would be kind of wary of being too transparent about what's in its products. But for at least a couple of reasons, SC Johnson is not. One of them is that the company has a long heritage of being environmentally responsible, and, you know, for a company that makes household chemicals, you know, proud of what it puts in its products. And the second thing is Fisk Johnson, who's the fifth generation family CEO of the company, recognizes that, as you mentioned, in today's era, you know, you got to be transparent about what's in your products, because if you're not, somebody's going to find out what's in them anyway, and if they don't like it, it's going to be on the internet. And especially in terms of transparency about information about what's in products, foods, beverages, and things that are used in the home, millennial moms are really on the hunt, and they are, more than any other demographic, are concerned about transparency about ingredients in products, you know, whether it's reading a label on a jar of peanut butter, or whether it's, you know, what really is in Glade, you know, that I'm spraying around my house. So it's a matter of heritage, it's a matter of principle for SC Johnson, and it's a matter of really necessity, and they're trying to be a leader and are a leader in this area in their industry.
Your story that's on chiefexecutive.net right now talks about how they've disclosed the presence of 368 skin allergens in its products, well above the what they have to do, not only in the U.S. and EU with regulations. That I'm guessing that comes at a cost, though, doesn't it?
Well, and in addition to the skin allergens, I think several thousand ingredients that are in fragrances that they don't use that many other companies use. And, well, I guess, yeah, it comes at a cost in the sense that consumers, you know, are going to say, well, okay, because that, you know, maybe a handful of consumers, let's say, will look at a specific allergen, will go to SC Johnson's website and say, well, I can't use that product. But the overall effect of this transparency is to encourage, you know, the broad market of consumers to feel like, okay, I can trust this company because they're telling me practically everything that's in their products. And so maybe that means they're not hiding anything. And, you know, again, as Stiff Johnson pointed out to me when I interviewed him about this, people also make the mistake of thinking that because something is natural or comes from nature, that it's without danger also. And he, you know, SC Johnson is a clever little piece of marketing in which they point out all the things in a banana that you actually don't want to ingest and that are, you know, the chemicals that could be tricky. So, you know, they point out sort of both sides of the road here. Our products are as clean as they can be. Here's what's in them. Yes, they're chemicals. And, hey, by the way, all natural products, you know, aren't necessarily all the safest either.
Mr. Johnson tells you in your story that he would like to see other companies get on this train, as you write, with him and his company. Do you see any of that happening? If so, who's doing it well? Who's not?
Well, it's definitely happening across, and in particular, we're talking about the consumer packaged goods industry. You know, the food and beverage industry has really led this charge for obvious reasons. People want to know what they're actually ingesting. And it started with some of the small and entrepreneurial companies who have taken big bites out of the business of the large companies. But now big companies are doing the same thing. They're trying to, number one, decrease the number of ingredients on a label. Number two, make it easier to understand what's on the label. Number three, have more natural and organic ingredients. And so you put all those things together. And then, of course, they want to get the benefit of transparency by marketing it. So you got an example of a company that's based in Wisconsin, just north of Chicago. They're Culver's, a burger chain. And their new commercial features the founder, Craig Culver, and his daughter, who's a millennial, who are going out to visit a chicken farmer that's supplying Culver's with some of the meat for its chicken products. And, you know, so transparency can kind of unfold in many different ways. But yeah, clearly this is something the industry recognizes is important.
You mentioned earlier the impact of millennial moms. Millennials in general like to know where their stuff comes from, their food, their products, all of that kind of thing. Was that the driver here for SC Johnson? Do they see that wall coming, or was it something else that is driving SC Johnson?
Well, it's kind of both. I mean, as I mentioned, the company has quite a heritage of being concerned about environmental sustainability. That, you know, they were one of the first to phase out ozone from their products, or fluorocarbons from their products, in respect to the ozone layer. And they're very big about reducing manufacturing waste that goes to landfills, that sort of thing. And, you know, they do this heritage going back to the fact that Frank Lloyd Wright designed their headquarters building there in Racine. So it's definitely part of their heritage, part of their DNA, but they also see generationally how much more important transparency is to millennials. And so some of the recent steps that you mentioned that I talk about in my story are things that they've done in part to address, you know, this new ethos and this new generation and the importance of transparency to them, because millennials are our biggest consuming generation right now, obviously.
Yeah, and one of those things is, and I didn't know this until I read your story, SC Johnson buying the soap maker Method. Which, you know, that's takes up a couple of shelves at my grocery store, that soap maker. It's a very popular soap maker that's popular with the folks that don't like chemicals.
Right, and important to Chicagoans, Method has a factory on the south side, you know, in an economically strained region that is very much an innovator in terms of things like solar energy and that kind of thing. And Method is one of those companies that began from a position of, you know, non-toxic ingredients, biodegradable, let's be open and honest about what's in here. So that's another way in which SC Johnson has extended its commitment to this this philosophy is by buying and supporting and helping to scale up this company method, which was very successful, but now, as you mentioned, you can find it in a lot more places.
Do you think that other companies have a little bit more pressure than SC Johnson, more investor pressure perhaps, that keeps them from doing some of this stuff? Or do you think that is actually a good thing to have that investor pressure on you?
Well, investors just want to make money, right? So, I mean, they're maybe socially concerned and all that, but their bottom line is the bottom line. In pursuit of that, though, companies are realizing that transparency is a good policy, you know, both for in terms of building trust by consumers, but also building the bottom line for the long term. Because if you end up not being trustworthy or information somehow gets out on the internet about an ingredient that's in one of your products that you haven't disclosed, then, you know, what does that end up doing? Hurting sales and hurting the bottom line. So many, many companies, you know, including SC Johnson, are looking at more than just the bottom line. They're looking at the long term as well and having these relationships with consumers and investors and just kind of throwing everything out there.
Dale, good article, and we appreciate the information, sharing it with us this morning. Thanks for getting up with us.
All right. Thank you.
Dale Buss with us again. The article appears at chiefexecutive.net. We'll link out to it, how SC Johnson's CEO elevates transparency in an unlikely industry.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are off 92 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are off about a quarter, heading to 8:30 Chicago time. It's 5:54. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A little change of scenery in the past 24 hours as we arrived in Arizona to 106-degree temperatures yesterday afternoon at about 5 o'clock. Oh, and here, no, there is no rain. As we look at the trade that started the week, lean hog futures settled mostly lower. Early support from that swine fever outbreak in Asia and a hurricane off the East Coast faded, and the market retreated from three-week highs. The October lean hog contract ended up 30 cents a pound, but December dropped $1.10 a pound. And as far as the cattle markets, firm cash markets underpinned the futures, and feeder cattle futures ended mixed. The October feeder cattle contract down 27 cents a hundredweight. Now, the grain market yesterday, we saw wheat futures up more than 3% on a mix of technical buying after last week's seven-week low. Soybean futures also climbed, while corn futures were little changed. The December wheat contract up 17 cents, November soybean contract up 1.25, and December corn up just a quarter of a cent. You have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Tuesday, September 11th. The NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Businesses Small Business Optimism Index, is out today. We'll also see the JOLTS reports, job openings and labor turnover survey. Report on wholesale trade is coming today. Also, the Red Book, a couple of note auctions as well on the calendar today. A few things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, September 11th.